Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Should we take in Palestinian refugees? I'm going to be joined now by Ian O'Doherty, columnist and broadcaster, to talk about his recent article in The Spectator. It was widely shared and widely discussed by an awful lot of people, so we wanted to get him on tonight to talk about it. It was titled, Why Won't Ireland Take in Palestinian Refugees? In the piece, Ian questions why Ireland, a country that has been very vocal in its support for Palestine, hasn't stepped up to offer asylum to Palestinian refugees. He argues that while there's a lot of political and public support for the Palestinian cause, there's been little talk about actually bringing refugees here. He looks at why that might be and what it says about Ireland's approach to the issue. So, Ian, thank you so much for joining me tonight. It's great to chat to you again. Can you tell us a little...
Andrew, as always.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Can you tell us, for those that didn't read the article, the point you were trying to make?
You mean everybody doesn't read The Spectator in Ireland, I'm shocked. The Spectator, for anybody who isn't aware, is the oldest English speaking magazine in the world. It's a famous publication operating out of London. But my piece was basically highlighting how easy it is to signal your virtue, but then reality has an awfully terribly rude habit of then punching you in the face. So we've had a government that has spent the last couple of years, but particularly since the pogrom of October the 7th, has really amped up the pro-Palestinian and anti-Israeli rhetoric, which has done us enormous damage, and which also led to the closure, the Israelis actually closing down their own embassy. So, in the embassy in Dublin. So there's been a war of words between Jerusalem and Dublin that's been becoming increasingly fractious and also kind of childish at times as well. You know, both sides have been lobbing insults that really diplomats and politicians shouldn't be lobbing at each other. And Israel Katz is a guy who's the Israeli defense minister. And he's been very vocal in his criticism of Ireland, particularly since Ireland, along with Norway and Spain, decided to go off on pretty much a solo run and recognise the state of Palestine. So when Trump came out with his rather inflammatory suggestion that basically they're just going to move everybody out of Gaza and move everybody out of the Palestinian areas, Israel Katz was quick to say, well, Ireland can take them. And basically it was almost like a schoolyard taunt of, well, if you love them so much, you take them in. And Simon Harris, his office, was very quick to go, this isn't helpful, and this isn't a good idea. And effectively, he just completely poured cold water on it. But what we're looking at is there's a few different strands that are very interesting to kind of unpick in this story. One, it's that never underestimate the power and the folly of human nature, that these are people both on the Israeli and on the Irish side who are just letting their tempers get the better of them. Trump's whole suggestion to basically clear out the Palestinians, there's no intention there of doing that. This is basically his way of saying to the other Middle Eastern countries, you need to step up.
I'm not cutting across you there, but people have said that. They said that what Trump actually means is, in many cases with President Donald Trump in the past, it's hard to decipher exactly what he means. But what he's trying to do, by some people, their take on it is, he's trying to focus attention now on what happens next. And he's sort of throwing a cat amongst the pigeons by saying, well, if you're not going to sort it out and you're not going to sort it out, we're going to sort it out. Would that be the kind of tone you think is coming across?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I watched his speech when he said it, and to me, the message was increasing. It was obviously clear. Basically, we have a situation where now Egypt, Jordan and Qatar are looking at the Americans to come up with their own kind of Marshall Plan for the reconstruction of Gaza. And the same, you know, remember the Marshall Plan after the Second World War with the reconstruction of Germany. And so, but the thing is, Trump, as we've seen, the way he's been closing down USAID, you know, and all the NGOs and stuff like that, Trump isn't going to fork out $50 billion of American taxpayer money to reconstruct Gaza. I mean, there's nothing in it for him. There's no gain in it for him. And as I was saying to, it was either in the piece or I was saying on TV the other day, was that the people forget, Trump is a property developer, right? And he looks on Gaza as property that has been destroyed. And like all property developers, he knows that if you want to get involved in a reconstruction project or any building project, you need investors. So he's basically calling out the Saudis, and he's calling out Qatar particularly, and because they're all pretending to be up in arms about this idea of turning Gaza into the Riviera of the Middle East and stuff, which it could have been 20 years ago if Hamas hadn't spent billions of dollars of aid on tunnels and weapons. There's no reason why Gaza can't be as beautiful as Israel is. But so what he's done is, when, as you correctly said, thrown the cat amongst the pigeons, he's thrown a gauntlet down to them. And you see, the thing is, the elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about is that, and if you, anybody takes a step back and looks at it, it's very interesting. None of the other countries are talking about taking in Palestinians as refugees. Jordan, in the wake of Trump's statement, they said they would actually consider it an act of war against Jordanian sovereign territory if there was an attempt to force Palestinian refugees to migrate there. And there's a reason for that. And it's because the last time the Palestinians were there, they tried to launch a coup against the king. So the Palestinians aren't liked by the Jordanians. The Palestinians aren't liked by the Lebanese. When they were given refuge there, they started a civil war that's been going on pretty much ever since. And the Egyptians want to have nothing to do with the Palestinians because of the radicalism. And Egypt is trying to become a little bit more secular and a little bit more liberal and a little bit more Western friendly. And it's amazing, actually, if you look at, there's a place called the Philadelphia Corridor, which runs from the border of Egypt alongside the Rafah crossing. And the wall that Egypt has put up between them and the Palestinians is like nothing the Israelis have ever done. And it's like, you know, it's really an impregnable kind of fortress. So Trump knows that they don't want to take in the Palestinians. So, therefore, somebody is going to have to pay to reconstruct Gaza. And Trump doesn't want to have to pay. So I think, as always with Trump, he comes out with things and you tend to go, actually, that's just mad. But invariably, there's a method to the madness. Not always. but invariably, there is a method to the madness. And really what he's done and is calling the other Arab nations, and I mean, these are immensely, the likes of Qatar and Saudi, they're immensely, incredibly wealthy petro states. And he's basically banging their heads together and go and saying to them, you have to pay for this. You have to pay for this. And that has really concentrated the minds. And it was interesting that today there was a meeting between Egypt, Saudi and Qatar to try and come up with some sort of a plan. So regardless of, now only a fool would predict how exactly this is going to play out. But already what we're seeing is that if Trump hadn't said anything, the big three, which is Egypt, Saudi and Qatar in this scenario, they would have kind of tried to sit it out. And, you know, they don't want to get involved. They all want to get better relations with America. Saudi had even normalized relations with Israel about 2 years ago. So everybody wants a bit of peace in the Middle East. But the Palestinians are seen as being a proxy for Iran, who are intent on causing chaos in the Middle East because the Iranians and the Saudis hate each other. It's a Persian-Arab thing. It goes back a long time. And they're all looking for domination over what is strategically the most important and the most volatile piece of real estate in the world. So you're looking at Trump, basically, the rest of them are playing drafts and he's playing chess.
Yeah. I'm curious, though. I mean, that is the geography aspect of it, and obviously the political and global political aspect of it. But at the heart of it, we've got 1.5 million people, and we've got a portion of a country that is completely decimated. So I think everybody agrees in some way that it needs to be rebuilt and it needs to be repopulated. I think what got people's backs up the most and the most offended most people got from was when Trump has been very difficult to pin down on what happens to the Palestinian people or whether they will be allowed to return. He sort of gives a word salad answer to every question when it's put to him, what happens to the Palestinian people. So what do you think will happen to the Palestinian people in the middle of all this?
I think they will end up staying there.
Yeah.
And returning. That's because, also don't forget, the Palestinians have been treated, the average Palestinian has been treated appallingly badly for years, probably since 67, by both their own leaders and by their neighbouring countries, because the Palestinians are a handy stick to beat the Israelis with. So that's why they get so much money for arms and things like that. And basically, the Palestinians have been duped into a situation where they're fighting other people's wars against Israel, the Zionist regime. So they've been treated... my heart bleeds for the average Palestinian, because they're just not catching a break from anybody. And the people who say that they're supporting the Palestinians, the countries who say that they're supporting the Palestinians, are actually causing the most damage in many ways. And so now we have a situation where... Now, Canada has said that they're prepared. They already have a Palestinian refugee program going on. But we've also got the interesting, and I don't want to get too bogged down into the international legal obligations, but because of UNRWA, you know, the UN refugee agency, that is still operating in Palestine, because the Palestinians have their own dedicated refugee agency, therefore they're not entitled to claim refugee status in any other country. So then they, therefore they become potentially stateless, and they're not granted refugee class. So, I mean, it's a complete mess, Gary, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's an absolute muddle, and greater minds than you or I have tried to figure out, and I've spent a lot of time over there, and I always come away feeling that I know less than I did when I went over the previous time, because it's utterly chaotic, and anybody who tells you that they have the solution to a Middle Eastern peace process, or anybody tells you, they're either mad or they're lying, basically.
Yeah, you always find sometimes when politicians, they close down the discussion by saying two-state solution, but they never explain what that looks like and how it's achieved. You know, it's almost just words now. Two-state solution, but how to get there is the question. What I want to ask you, go on there, Ian, sorry, go on.
No, but the problem is the two-state solution is gone now. Hamas have repeatedly now said that they don't want a two-state solution, they just want the destruction of Israel, and they're not going to settle. And Iran has said that they won't sponsor a two-state solution, they want the destruction of Israel, and they're not going to settle. And that's where the likes of Egypt and Saudi are kind of backing off. They're going, oh, hang on a second, lads, you know, because if a full regional war breaks out there, we're looking at what will probably end up as the Third World War. And the sensible players in the room know this. And nobody on either side wants to sacrifice themselves for the Palestinians. So that's why they constantly go to the brink, and then they constantly kind of step back and take a deep breath. And then the whole grim, terrible cycle just continues. But, I mean, I've friends in Tel Aviv who are Palestinians. I mean, there's a million Palestinians in Israel. And they're more terrified of Hamas than they are of the Israelis or the Americans, you know. So the Palestinians are a people who are living under siege, not just by the Israelis, but by their own leadership. And so the Israelis, ever since, you've no idea that the amount of anger and the hurt and the devastation that was caused by October the 7th. Even the Israeli peaceniks, and there was always a very strong lobby for peace with the Palestinians in Israeli society and in the Knesset, which is the Israeli parliament. But that's dissipated now, because they're so incredibly furious about the biggest slaughter of Jews since the Holocaust. And so they're not as willing or as eager to sit down necessarily and talk peace until Hamas are gone. And this is there's lots of elephants in this very large room, and one of them is Hamas have to go. And even the Palestinian Authority, which is Fatah, which are the rivals, I mean, they fought a civil war against Hamas, and there's still military operations being carried out between Fatah and Hamas against each other, so they're still fighting their own civil war. But they blame Hamas for causing all of this. And so you're looking at basically the potential for either a broader war or a fairly catastrophic civil war amongst the Palestinians themselves. So, and again, this is just to go back to what Trump was trying to do. Now, I mean, I'm not a mind reader. I'm not sure any mind reader would necessarily want to get into the mind of Trump. but, you know, I'd say that's a fairly scary prospect, to be honest with you.
You'd be lost in a labyrinth.
He's basically, Yeah, but basically what he's been saying to them is, to the other Middle Eastern countries, to the other Muslim Middle Eastern countries, this is your mess. And for once and for all, it's up to you to clean it up and not to look to the Americans and not to look to the broader international community. Now, there's going to be, as I said, the conservative estimates are at least $50 billion for any sort of a possible reconstruction. And Trump, when he called it, he said he could turn it into the Riviera of the Middle East. He's not looking at turning Gaza into a giant theme park with, you know, tourist shops and golf courses and, you know, Mar-a-Gazo, as people have been calling it,
Mar-a-Lago,
you know, and this kind of thing. But no, it's actually, it's a much more subtle and clever plan than people are ever prepared to give Trump credit for, because they just won't give him credit for. And the Israelis, they were very quick to come out of the blocks and say that the Irish, the Spanish and the Norwegians, because we were so loud in our recognition of the Palestinian state, a state that doesn't have a capital, a state that doesn't really exist. So Israel Katz and Gideon Saar, who's the foreign minister, and he's had some really, really angry diatribes against the Irish as well. And I can see where he's coming from in some of them. Not in others, but in some of them, yeah, you know, he has a point. And so they're going, well, you know, if you love the Palestinians so much, you take them in.
Well, it seems like a fair political point, in fairness. I mean, we have absolutely been very front-footed from the get-go and very pro-Palestinian. So, I mean, the question of if the Palestinian refugees need somewhere to go, one would assume Ireland would be front-footed in that scenario, you know?
Well, this is the politicians have painted themselves into this corner, and they now are realising that, you know, you can do your student union politics, you can do your posturing all you want, but particularly, I mean, I've known various different government ministers down the years that have spoken and said, just stay out of the Middle East. Just stay out of it. Stay out of it. Because it's radioactive and it toxifies everybody who touches it. And so we have a situation, to say that there's between 1.5 and 2 million Palestinians who could fall under this if they are granted refugee status. So Canadians take a couple hundred thousand. So say we're left with a broad figure of 1.5 million looking for safe shelter. And the Israelis have come out and they've said, well, 500,000 to Ireland, 500,000 to Spain and 500,000 to Norway. Because if you love them so much, you house them and you feed them.
Well, it's a question we're going to be asking. It's a question we're going to be asking tonight of the Irish public. Should Ireland be taking in Palestinian refugees? And if so, what does that look like? But Ian, I'm going to have to leave it there because I have to go to a break. But thanks so much for talking to us this evening and shedding some light on what is sure to be not the last time we talk about Israel and Gaza, right?
Well, I mean, may you live in interesting times. When it comes to the Middle East, it's always interesting.
All right, Ian. Thank you so much. Columnist and broadcaster, Ian O'Doherty there.
Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.